Mr. Sadasky, Atari 8-Bit Productivity Podcast, Season 1, Episode 8.
Hello and welcome back. I'm your host, Wade, and here we are, a new year, 2015, and we have many great programs to be covered. Over the holidays, I had a chance to get some pre-work done on a few episodes. Had I been thinking efficiently, I would have taken along the mic during holiday travel so I could push this episode through since it's been done for about 2 weeks now. Lesson learned for next year, and I apologize for the delay. I hope you all have a prosperous 2015. If you didn't get a chance or didn't notice via Facebook or Twitter, go check out the website. The post previous to this one has some interesting statistics about the episodes to date. Nothing fancy, but they're interesting nonetheless. This episode will feature VisaCorp VisaCalc. I have a lot of information collected, and hopefully it doesn't get too long. With that, let's get on with it. Like you don't already know, a spreadsheet is a program for organization, analysis, and storage of data in a tabular form. Basically, an electronic simulation of paper accounting worksheets. The data is organized in rows and columns. As data is changed in any cell, calculations for other cells that reference the changed cell automatically get updated. The word spreadsheet came from spread, in its sense of a newspaper or magazine item, text and or graphics, that covers two facing pages, extending across the centerfold and treating the two pages as one large one. The compound word spreadsheet came to mean the format used to present bookkeeping ledgers, with columns for categories and expenditures across the top, invoices listed down the left margin, and the amount of each payment in a cell where its row and column intersect, which were traditionally a spread across facing pages of a bound ledger, ruled into rows and columns in that format and approximately twice as wide as ordinary paper. VisiCalc was the first spreadsheet for any personal computer and the first spreadsheet to appear on the Atari 8-bit, or as they refer to it, instantly calculating electronic worksheet. It was developed by Software Arts, which was founded by Dan Bricklin and Bob Frankston in 1979. Software Arts was purchased by Lotus in 1985. VisaCorp was an early personal computer software publisher. Its most famous products are VisaOn and VisaCalc. VisaCorp started life as Personal Software, which was founded in 1976 by Dan Foulstra and Peter Jennings. Personal Software first published Jennings' microchess program for the MOS Technology Chem-1 computer. In 1979, Personal Software released VisaCalc, which would be so successful that in 1982, the company was renamed VisaCorp. VisaCorp was sold to Paladin Software after a legal feud between Software Arts and VisaCorp. There's really quite an interesting connection between all these companies, including Lotus. In the show notes, there are links to many of the interesting articles regarding the history. I would suggest checking them out. The first spreadsheet I used was GT Albert E spreadsheet, which came with the Indus GT disk drive. But I really didn't have a need for it back then, so it was just a novelty for me. I really cut my spreadsheet teeth on Lotus 1-2-3 on the PC around 1986-1987-ish, and have used several different ones, including Borland's Quattro Pro, Microsoft Excel, which grew out of Multiplan, OpenOffice Calc, and most recently Apple Numbers. There was one for the Atari ST I used briefly, but I can't put my finger on the name. I wouldn't consider myself an advanced spreadsheet user, but between intermediate and advanced. I built many spreadsheets over the years with and without macros, graphs, etc., so I know my way around them. With that said, I don't know if I can do this justice, but here goes.
Technical data.
VisiCalc had two main releases. The first was in 1980 by Personal Software. The second was in 1982 by VisaCorp. It was developed by Software Arts Incorporated. And there were two programmers, Dan Bricklin and Bob Frankston. This was a commercial license, it came on disk, it required 32K of memory with 48K recommended, and it required a disk drive. The program consumes about 26K, so with 32K you'll have around 6K free for your spreadsheet. With 48K it will be around 21K free for your spreadsheet. It doesn't appear to use anything beyond 48K though. It's compatible with the 800, the XL, and the XE. Atari Mania lists it with a rarity of 7. The price was $199.95. And today's price, that's $607.54.
Oh, let's go! That'll hurt.
Yes, ouch. The manual comes in a 3-ring binder, roughly 5x7 in size, and it's 170 pages long. It refers to the program as an electronic sheet. The term spreadsheet is not even found in the manual. It's very well written, and it's easy to follow. It consists of 4 sections, which are 1. An overview, 2. Step-by-step tutorial, which is made up of 4 lessons, 3. A command reference, and 4. An index. Again, all the sections are extremely well written.
Usage notes.
Let's talk about using it now. Once the program is booted off a disk, you can put the disk away. You won't ever need it again. So what do you have after you boot? The screen is basically broken down into 2 sections. You have a control panel at the top, or the first 3 lines, and then you have your cells at the bottom. So the control panel, the first line, has the entry contents. It shows what cell the cursor is actually in, the value, which will have a V or L for a label to indicate its type, and the value of that cell, which would be text for a label or a number or formula for a value. Anytime the spreadsheet is calculating, a exclamation point will appear next to the C on the far right side of this same line. The second line is the prompt line. On the far right is the memory indicator showing the free memory in kbytes. It's a 2-digit number. The third line is the edit line. So for the lower portion of the screen, on the 4th line of the actual screen, you have your column labels, and all the remaining lines of the screen are for the row data. The spreadsheet is 4 columns wide and 20 rows high, representing columns A through D and rows 1 through 20 by default. The default column width is 9 characters. The columns are labeled A through Z, and then it repeats with AA through AZ, and then it starts with BA through BK, which BK is the extent of the column range. And speaking of ranges, the row extent is 254. When referencing cells, you'll reference them with the column first and then the row. So you'll end up with something like A1 or J10 or Z3. Though the display is initially a 4x20 spreadsheet, internally that spreadsheet is represented as a 1x1 sheet. It grows dynamically as cells are entered. So when you define A10 and J10, for example, the spreadsheet will then be a 10x10 spreadsheet internally. Each empty cell consumes 2 bytes of memory, so it will pay off in memory savings to make your sheets as compact as possible. As you enter formulas and labels, memory is allocated as needed. Deleting a cell's contents does not reclaim its memory. So to reclaim its memory space, you need to save it, clear the spreadsheet, then reload it, which will effectively allocate only the memory required to hold the spreadsheet contents as currently defined. I was happy to see that formula writing via cursor pointing was there. Press plus or minus to start a formula, then use the arrow key to move to the cell you want to reference, enter an operand, then move to the next cell, next operand, next cell, etc., etc. And you complete the formula entry using the return key. As with modern spreadsheets, the formula is displayed as it's being built. I had no idea this standard spreadsheet feature traced back to the beginning. Navigation is straightforward, using the cursor, or you can use direct cell navigation with a shortcut, greater than, and then you put in the column and the row like A1. There is one thing that I had to get used to. Canceling input is done with the break key, not the escape key, the break key. VisiCalc is very good at catching errors, and it generates a small raspberry if you try to do something invalid, like move to an invalid cell. When entering data into a cell, if you start it with dot, plus, minus, open parenthesis, at, pound, or any of the standard digits 0 through 9, then the entry is assumed to be of value type. Label type entries are created when you start the entry with any letter or with double quotes. You can also create repeating labels using the forward slash and dash, and then the character that you want to repeat. So if you wanted a line of dashes, you do forward slash dash dash. When entering numbers and calculations, it's important to note that they are maintained with up to 11 significant digits or decimal places. Any rounding that you see is only done on screen. By default, the spreadsheet is calculated from the top left, and it works its way down and to the right until it reaches the bottom right. This is called columnar order. All cells are evaluated only once, though you can force the sheet to recalculate with the exclamation key. This has an impact on how you might organize data. If you have a formula that references other entries, it must be located below or to the right of those entries. It will either traverse down or to the right. The default is down a column. This is noted by the C for columnar in the upper right corner of the control panel. You can switch to row order to the right using the global menu. The indicator will then change to an R. The calculation order is important to know so that you don't create formulas that have forward references. For example, enter 1 plus B1 in cell A1. Then in cell B1, enter 2 times open parenthesis C1 plus D1 close parenthesis. Then in cell C1, enter 2. Then in D1, enter 5. Cell B1 will have the correct value of 14. A1 will have an incorrect value of 5 until the sheet is recalculated, at which point it will be correctly updated to 15. So what happened? Because the formula in cell B1 references values in C1 and D1, which were empty at the time B1 was calculated, and the same problem exists with A1, the value in B1 was not calculated when A1 is evaluated. You can rewrite the spreadsheet in opposite order and it will work as expected. Cell A1 equals 2, cell B1 equals 5, cell C1 equal 2 times open parenthesis A1 plus B1 close parenthesis, and cell D1 equal 1 plus C1.
Whoa! Trippy!
Yeah, I know that was hard to follow. And there's another reference trap you can fall into, circular references, though this one isn't limited to VisiCalc. VisiCalc doesn't warn you, though. If you do find yourself with forward references, you can toggle automatic recalculation off. This is also useful if you have a large spreadsheet or one with many logarithmic functions that you want to update but don't want to wait for the delay of calculation during each edit. While I'm talking about calculation order, let's talk about formulas. Formulas in cells are evaluated from left to right. If you want multiplication and division to take precedence over addition and subtraction, you need to wrap those portions of your formula in parentheses. For example, 10 plus 15 divided by 3 will yield 25 divided by 3, or 8.333, and you might have intended it to calculate as 10 plus open parentheses 15 divided by 3 close parentheses, which yields 10 plus 5, or 15. Speaking of operators, the standard ones are plus for addition, minus for subtraction, asterisk for multiplication, slash for division, and the caret for exponentiation. I can't believe I didn't mess that up. Menus in VisiCalc are accessed using the slash key. This reminds me of Lotus 1-2-3, which is the order I experienced these programs in, but the reference should be reversed as slash menu of the spreadsheet was pioneered in VisiCalc. Before I stray away from the menu too long, I mentioned that the long recalcs can occur while you're doing editing of spreadsheets that have many logarithmic functions in it. But you don't need to worry about type ahead because VisiCalc does have a type ahead buffer, so you can enter commands while it's working and it will catch up to you eventually. VisiCalc allows you to split the window vertically or horizontally. This is in addition to being able to lock the rows and columns, or both. A nice feature for such an early program. When you have a split window, each window has its own global settings. It may alter column widths you set if you direct it to do something that it needs more real estate to accomplish, such as splitting the window vertically. If you do split the window, use the semicolon key to move between them. When you switch back to single window, the column widths, etc., will be those of the window the cursor was active in at the time windowing was closed. You can also have each window scroll in a synchronized fashion, i.e., you move left in one, then the other one will move left two, or as well, not that it will move two cells. VisiCalc allows you to set column widths globally. The default width of 9 characters allows for the display of 8 numeric character positions, a maximum of 9999999, because one space is always placed in the leftmost position of any numeric cell. Text cells do not have this limitation. The space is necessary if you have two numeric cells with large numbers next to each other, otherwise you wouldn't be able to pick them apart without referencing the column or row header. VisiCalc allows you to set cell formats globally or individually. If you set them individually, the format specified is noted on the entry contents line 1, between the current cell and the value type, such as $F, which would mean format as currency. Cell formats can be one of seven: D, the default, which is same as the global format; G, use the general format; I, use the integer format, no decimals; L, left justify; R, right justify; dollar, currency with two decimals; or asterisk, for graphing. Setting these on a particular cell overrides the global default. Further changes to the global default will not affect a cell which has an explicit format defined. I'm not sure if I like this or not. There are advantages to having it work this way, and advantages to having it reset if a global redefinition is input. The graphing format is pretty neat. It fills the cell with enough asterisk to represent the value of the cell. You can create some basic charts using this method. Now I'm going to talk briefly about editing, or moving cells around. Inserting and deleting rows and columns automatically updates formulas as needed, just as you would expect. Instead of copy, you have cell replication. Cell replication allows for single cells to ranges of cells to be moved or copied. When there are cell references, you are asked if you want the copies to be left as is or referential, meaning as the row or column increases, the corresponding value in the formula increases. So plus B1 would become plus C1 or plus D1, etc. Cell formats are copied as well. You can also replace the return key with colon if you want to just type it out rapidly. There's also a move command, but it only allows you to move an entire row or column, not individual cells. Now on to functions. @sum. So basic yet so useful. These are also part of what makes spreadsheets so powerful. VisiCalc lets you enter the first few letters followed by the open parenthesis, and it will expand the name appropriately. You only need enough letters to uniquely identify the function, such as @m or @mi for min, or @ma for max. Functions generally take one or more arguments, which can be either an expression or cell reference or a range. Incomplete functions can be entered, but they will not calculate, leaving a zero in its place. Speaking of incomplete entries, if you want to edit a cell, there is no inline editing, so you'll have to retype the entire contents. There is a full range of built-in functions, though not as many as modern spreadsheets contain. But there are enough to provide the average user with plenty of capability. A few words about macros. We don't need no stinking macros. There, now you know. Printing. What can I say about printing? If you look at the print command syntax in the manual, you will surely be confused. /p initiates print. From there you choose printer or file, using p or f. Then you enter the lower right coordinate extent that you want printed. You have the option of passing in setup commands like condensed mode and some options for printing to RS-232 devices. If you don't need those, just press return. The important thing to note is that the spreadsheet will be printed from top left cell, which is where your cursor is, not A1, to the bottom right extent that you specified on the print line. So what about printing the formulas and not the data? Sometimes that might be useful for, say, a backup or to share with someone that may have an incompatible disk, such as with an Apple or a Commodore. Why would you want to do that? You can print the formulas using the storage save command and giving it p: as the name. Now, I just mentioned the storage save command, which is how you would normally save your spreadsheet off to the disk or cassette. You would also use the storage load command to pull your spreadsheet from the storage media into the memory. All right, let's talk a little bit about files. Multiple drives are supported using the D and then the number syntax. The cassette is also supported using the C: syntax. There's also support for RS-232 devices as well, though I don't recall any such storage devices on the Atari. Maybe somebody out there knows and can fill me in. When specifying file names, you can use 8 characters exclusive of the device name, and the first letter must be a letter, not a digit. You can save and load files in diff format as well by using storage pound S for save and storage pound L for load. I talked about diff in Season 1, Episode 6, Synapse SynFile Plus episode. DIF, or DIF, is short for Data Interchange Format. You have the option to export single columns or rows, or the sheet range similar to printing. VisiCalc adds .vc to the spreadsheet files and .prf to print format files.
Summary.
Overall, this is a top-notch piece of software. I can't really find much to fault on it. It does what I expect of a spreadsheet, and it does it well. I didn't run into anything that really frustrated me. So with that, let's talk about complaints. Once a title lock is in place, you can no longer navigate to column A, or row 1, or any of the locked rows or columns for that matter, using the cursor keys. You have to use direct cell navigation, which is the greater than column and row. And overall, VisiCalc performed fairly quickly considering the processing power available, and recalculating entire spreadsheets took less than a couple of seconds. However, the larger the spreadsheet got, the slower the navigation scrolling got, and likewise recalculations. And last, loading is a little on the slow side, but this can partially be blamed on Atari's slow disk drives. So what did I like about it? Well, there's a few things, and the first would really be handy in modern spreadsheets. You can do a calculation before accepting the input for a cell by entering the calculation like you're going to enter it into the cell, but press exclamation instead of return. This causes the calculation to be completed in the edit line. Then press return to enter that computed value into the cell being edited. Neat. Very neat. I've done this quite a bit in spreadsheets. Enter plus 33.56 plus 6.09 plus 123.45 equals to some $3 values, which ends up in the cell, and all I want is the sum total in that cell. It works, but the details aren't needed beyond the initial calculation. Another nice feature is the ability to grab the value of a cell in a formula. Enter plus B1 an operand, navigate to the cell you want the value from, and press pound. When you press pound, the cell reference is removed from the formula and replaced by the cell's value. However, this is a one-time deal, so if the value in the reference cell changes, it won't be reflected in the cell that you put it in. And last, any cell with a label is automatically valued at zero if referenced in a calculation. Nice! Better than at error, as most modern spreadsheets do. Okay, the year is now 1980. Would I use it? Absolutely. The only other choice at the time was paper. I didn't run into any bugs, and everything just works, as it should. From a retro perspective, would I use it? Absolutely. The only thing I might have an issue with is the lack of support for extended memory configurations of the XL and XE. If I run into another spreadsheet that does a better job, I'll let you know. I give this a bit rating of 8, and I think that's a first for the show. It really is an exceptional piece of software, which I guess warrants the high price. If you are a collector, do yourself a favor and find a copy. I know there is at least one place that still has new shrink-wrapped copies at a reasonable price. Email me if you want details. On a side note, I have a problem now in that I haven't featured every piece of software, so there may be a better one that I A. know about but haven't reviewed, or B. just don't know about. I think at the conclusion of each season, I will have one show which will be a best of breed show with my picks drawn from all that have been featured. This will allow me to keep an up and running preference as time goes on.
Fun facts.
Alright, here are some interesting facts I found out. 1. Dan Bricklin had originally proposed the name CalculEdger for the product. He wrote about the name in a paper for his course in advertising. He listed some of the traits of that name, such as that it sounded too much like something for a bookkeeper, and then explained that other names that he had thought of, such as electronic spreadsheet or CalcuPaper, didn't sound right. or may not have been understood by people even after they knew what it is. Not everybody knows what a spreadsheet is. Ledger is more common, or was back then anyway. I think that pretty much everyone knows what a spreadsheet is today, since they are a core component of most office suites. 2. The first ad for VisiCalc appeared in May 1979 issue of Byte magazine, a few months prior to its anticipated release. It was one of the small teaser ads that appears with many others on a single page. It read, "VisiCalc, how did you ever do without it?" No screenshots, no description, that was it. 3. VisiCalc was first shown to the press in a special room at the West Coast Computer Fair in San Francisco in May of 1979. 4. VisiCalc was announced to the public at the National Computer Conference in New York City in June of 1979. And last, version 1.35 was floated out early to customers in the late summer of 1979. The first official release was 1.37, which shipped in mid-October of 1979. Well, there was quite a bit of content there, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed making it. I think this might be the longest episode, and I kind of anticipate that maybe Atari Writer will probably best it.
Listener feedback.
I do have a little bit of feedback, but first I need to apologize for the audio quality on some of the past episodes. Sometimes they seemed a little bit loud, and I'm working on doing a better job with it. If anybody has any detailed tips on using Audacity, please send them my way. I could probably use the assistance. Now, on to the feedback. For Season 1, Episode 7, Rich, via the Inverse Ataski website, says, "Hey Wade, I really enjoyed the podcast. I wasn't an Atari owner, but I really enjoy listening to your shows. It would be helpful to me, and possibly others, if the audio file names contain the show name or initials. Perhaps just Ataski added to the file name, or maybe Inverse Ataski S1E5.mp3. Thanks for all your hard work." Well, Rich, Episode 7 had already been recorded by the time I received your comment, but I did rename it, and others will be similarly named from now on. Thanks for the useful suggestion. Hopefully others will find it a welcome change too. Next is a comment from George via Twitter. "Love the show. Look forward to it." Thank you, George. And last but not least, there are some comments from the Antic Episode 17. Kevin mentioned something about Data Perfect. I haven't covered that yet, but it will be done. And there was also a call out to VCF SE 2015. Yes, I fully intend on being there. And I'm also contemplating Kansas Fest, even though that's an Apple event. I've told Rob from Player Missile if he goes, I will definitely go. And even if he doesn't go, I still might go because I'd really like to meet some of the other podcast hosts and learn more about the Apple computers. And from what I've heard, it sounded like a really good time. So maybe there will be an Atari invasion next year.
Special thanks.
As always, I would like to thank all you listeners and everybody that has given me support via email, Facebook, Twitter, or whatever. The support encourages me to keep going and providing this content. So again, thank you. And if you haven't done so already, please drop me a line and let me know how you like the show, any improvements I might make, or anything you don't like about the show. And also, please rate the show on iTunes if you have the ability to. This will help other people find the show, as well as let me know how I'm doing.
Contact information.
The show notes can be found on inverseataski.info. It can be found on iTunes using the search term Ataski or Atari. It can be found on Facebook at facebook.com/inverseataski. And you can also follow on Twitter with @inverseataski. To leave comments or suggestions, you can email wade@inverseataski.info or inverseataski@icloud.com. Inverseataski can now also be found on Stitcher. As always, thanks for listening and stay tuned for the next episode. That covers two facing pasages. Pasages? When you switch back to single menu, what's a menu? You'd also use the storage load command to pull it in to the word pull it into the word processor. How about pull it into the spreadsheet?
Goodbye.